Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, it is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap. And we got a lot to talk about this weekend. Of course, we do have live fighting on FS1. Lamont Peterson is in the main event, and we're getting ready to go into the second fight. I haven't seen the scorecard yet, but I'm assuming that they gave this to Anthony Peterson. Mr. Scully should be in here soon. Let's see if we can get him in here. It's been a while since he's been on. He's been up in Canada, actually, training Mr. Benavidez, and we want to know about what's going on with that. And, of course, we just seen Mr. Bivol. Let's see.
Hello.
Mr. Scully. Hello, Mr. Scully.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
We're doing great, man. Doing great. I was just telling the audience that you've been away for a while. You've been with Mr. Benavidez. And we just saw that the new fight was announced. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on?
Well, it's kind of a funny unique situation because he's actually fighting a guy who I sparred with a few years ago down when I was living in Florida. A kid, they call him Hot Rod. I can't really pronounce his name. I think his first name is like Rajiv or Radiv. He's from, I don't know, he's from not Russia, but, somewhere over there, Eastern Bloc country. And he lives in Florida. They call him Hot Rod. And I actually sparred with him in, I believe it was 2015 when I was living down there. And he's the guy, if you remember, he fought Marcus Brown a couple of years ago in a fight that apparently, I didn't see the fight, but apparently many, many viewers thought that he beat Marcus and got robbed. I'm pretty sure he dropped Marcus once or twice in the fight. Very tall kid. So, I would think for a while anyway, he'll present some style issues at the very least.
Okay. Now, what did you think about Mr. Duvall's last
I thought he boxed pretty good. He looked pretty good, and I know Joe's a big puncher, and so he was somewhat careful and did what he had to do to kind of control the fight, and he won pretty convincingly. He looked good. He didn't look I wouldn't say he looked awesome or anything like that, but he definitely won convincingly.
So now, what is kind of the shakedown here in the light heavyweight? That four champions once again, plus do we got some diamonds and tens up around hanging around the achievement? What?
You know what's incredible, and I don't think this has ever happened. I think this is the first time ever with the current format. But not only do we have four light heavyweight champions, but all four of them are Russian. Which I don't think has ever happened in recent boxing history since there's been four champions, WBO, WBA, IBF, and WBC. So we have four Russian light heavyweight champions, which is pretty incredible. And it has some great storylines, in them automatically in the mix. So it's a good time to be a light heavyweight because you also have Marcus Brown and guys like that who are, obviously very credible.
So So right now, in the light heavyweight division, are we going to see a unification, or are we going to be seeing like we do in so many of these weight classes with the talent? You mentioned Marcus Brown. I'm sure he wants a shot at somebody, but I mean, is there a possible unification here?
I mean, I would hope so, but this is boxing, and unfortunately, that's generally not the way things go as a rule. But although I will say, generally over the last couple of years, Kovalev has not mentioned Arthur's name. He's actually conspicuously not mentioned Arthur. And I noticed a couple of weeks ago, he, for the first time that I've seen, he actually seemed receptive to a fight with Arthur, and he actually acknowledged Arthur as a credible guy. So, I have a feeling that fight is going to be talked up more and more right after Arthur, assuming he wins this next fight. So we could be on to something there, because like I say, this is the first time that I recall seeing Kovalev, positively mention Arthur as a possible opponent. Although he said he would fight him next if that's what it took, and Arthur said, okay, let's fight the first week in May. And apparently Kovalev's team, they backtracked a little bit and said that wasn't enough time or whatever the case was. But I would suspect that after this fight, the talk will start heavy. That would be if it was a unification fight, I think that would be the first one to happen.
Of course, it's amateur time. We're getting to, I think the big matchup this weekend is in Reno, I believe, or coming soon. Maybe it's next month. What's happening? Even though you've been away, I know you kind of kept track of what's happening on the New England side of the era there. So what's going on with amateur boxing?
Well, I do know they have a qualifier coming up. I think it might even be starting tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. I think everybody's congregating wherever it is right now.
That's the one in Reno.
I know guys are going out there. They're there right now. So, so that's the, but it's a confusing thing because they've changed the format to make the team so much over the last couple of years that, I just know that this is kind of like the first step. But there'll be others for sure. There'll be one on the East Coast in the next few months that I would like to take a couple of my guys to at some point.
What weights are your guys?
As far as the guys that could qualify for that, I have a 152 pounder and a 165. Who I actually was just in Montreal. With Arthur, and I had them come up, and I got them with some great sparring at Otis Grant's gym. And then last week I was in Las Vegas for something, and they came out with me, and I had them box guys out there, including Nico Ali, who is Muhammad Ali's grandson. So those are the two guys, a kid named OJ and a kid named Damani, who I'm working closely with. So those are the two guys that I would like to bring to the qualifier that's on the East Coast coming up.
All right, let's talk about some of the of course, we have to talk about Errol and Mikey. John, did you see that coming? And what did you think about Errol boxing those first, I'd say, five or six rounds?
Right. Well, it was pretty, to me, it was pretty easy to figure. I thought it would be more, violent. I thought he would be, a little bit more aggressive and a little bit, letting a little bit bigger punches go, trying to get him out of there. And, sometimes in the big fights like that, I always think of Tommy Hearns. Like he's my guy when it comes to big fights in terms of what would Tommy Hearns do, you know, and like with Hagler and Duran and these different fights, you know, he generally went for it, you know, like at some point he was trying to get you out of there, and he would, you know, even if he had a lead, he was trying to get you out of there. And I just feel like a smaller guy, you know, I kind of expected Errol to go for it a bit more, you know, and I think he should have, you know, even though he won beautifully, you know, he boxed a great fight, and I was very impressed with that. But you know, at that level, when you're, you know, you're a star trying to be a superstar, and you're trying to reach legendary status, you know, the best tactics aren't always the best tactics in terms of what you're trying to achieve. So for better or worse, like I say, I think a guy like Tommy Hearns would have went all out, you know, even if he was 11 rounds ahead. I think in the 12th round, if he hadn't gotten Mikey out of there by the 12th, I think he would have went all out in the 12th trying for it. So I think that's something that, you know, maybe Floyd kind of set a precedence with that, you know, not going for the decisive knockout. But the fact is, you know, that's what people want to see. And even, you know, all the guys, Sugar Ray Leonard, even, you know, Sugar Ray was known more as a boxer, but when it came down to it, I mean, he was trying to get you out of there. And, you know, I think that's something that fighters need to be a little bit more, you know, cognizant of is, you know, that type of thing. That's like your ticket to stardom is closing the show and not just winning when you have such a physical advantage over a guy. It takes a little bit more to reach that next level you're trying to get to.
Yeah, so in your eyes, Mikey's stock went up because he lasted the entirety of the fight.
I mean,
Or
to a certain degree, because I mean, there's guys a lot bigger and maybe supposedly better that didn't last the distance, and I think a lot of people thought he would get stopped. So you know, in that regard, it's always, I mean, obviously not getting stopped is always a positive as opposed to the alternative. You know, but he, you know, I think he realized he was in with a bigger, stronger guy, and the guy, you know, he must have felt the power early on, and he wasn't able to really press it and open up the way he wanted to either. And that's what I mean. Like in a situation like that, you know, somebody to go to the next level, you know, because to be at that level is fine. I mean, what they did was fine. Both of them, you know, they gave the effort that they gave, and they tried to win. But you know, when you're at that level, trying to go to pay-per-view, and you're trying to be a megastar, you know, it takes a little bit more to really capture the people. And you know, I think Errol going all out for a knockout, you know, would have been the way to go if he's trying to reach that Tommy Hearns, Duran Leonard type of level.
Yeah, well, you know, I understand what you're saying there, and it really makes sense. The only thing that you know, because I really thought that Errol would get him out of there within 10 rounds, and it did look for a minute like he would, but I guess after, you know, after he threw that volley and you know, went through that round and saw Mikey was still standing, he said, "Well, you know, I can cruise." So, you know, I definitely understand what you're saying. It doesn't seem like they have the killer instinct. But then again, Scully, are the fighters too friendly these days?
Yeah, you know, that's part of it. You know, it sounds funny, but it's like now guys are more accessible to each other with social media, that you know, they're around each other a lot more. And you know, I think it's kind of a different era, these guys. You know, and the guys, there's a long list of angles you could look at, but the guys have so much money now, so much quicker. You know, you look at Hagler. I remember even after his career was over, and Bob Arum was saying how he said something to the effect of Marvin Hagler hated everybody he fought, and he still hates them today. Like he still holds a grudge against every last one of them. And and I could see that about Marvin. You know, I saw that in Bob Foster. Even when Bob Foster was an old man before he died, when they used to talk to him about Virgil Hill and guys like that that succeeded him, you could see like the nastiness with the guy. You know, but now the guys, you know, they're on social media together. They're text messaging each other, and it's just they're getting so much money early on in their careers that they don't have a lot of, like, there aren't guys like Hagler who hated Ray Leonard because Ray Leonard was an Olympic darling and got big money for his pro debut, and Hagler got something like $600 for his debut, and Ray got $40,000. So they don't have that kind of animosity deep down because they're all treated so well. Everybody's making good money. So I think that part of boxing might be lost, and it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. I mean, it's a good thing that guys aren't having a struggle like they did, but it's a bad thing because, you know, you're seeing guys very, very content with going the distance, and outboxing guys. And, you know, as opposed to back in the day, not that long ago, when knockout appeared to be on everybody's mind. I mean, you look at all the guys. I mean, look at all the guys who got knocked out in the 13th, 14th, and 15th round back in the 70s and 80s. I mean, these guys were still going for the knockouts late in the fights. They were going for it. Nowadays, I couldn't see it. Like, if a guy's ahead in the 11th round, going into the 11th, you can guarantee he's not going for the knockout for the 11th and the 12th. I don't know too many guys that would. They just kind of cruise their way through and win a decision. So that's something that we're not seeing like we used to.
Well, I see the professor's on the line, Julie. We're going to get the professor in here and see what he thinks about that. Professor, how are you doing this evening?
I'm good, JK. What was you discussing?
Whether fighters were too friendly today. John was talking about that killer instinct and fighters not, you know, like you said about the Errol Spence. He thought Errol Spence should have went for the knockout of Mikey in the 11th and 12th round. We were just saying that, you know, it seems today, well, Scully was asking, you know, about the fighters were too friendly to have that type of animosity that we had, like, back in the Hagler days or back in the 70s and 80s. Your thoughts?
I mean, if you're just talking about the Errol Spence fight, prime example, yesterday we had a fight. It was 10 seconds left in the final round. The guy thought, you know, he was winning comfortably. Showboating a little bit and got hit with a punch, and he lost the fight. He was winning every round and got hit with a punch and lost the fight. So Errol Spence did what he's supposed to do because he saw that he had a veteran fighter in front of him, very educated, with good ring IQ, that I'm not going to go out here and try to force this knockout and then get myself caught up in a situation and get stunned or get hurt or get a flash knockdown, just like the Danny Jacobs, Sergio Mora fight. He had just knocked Mora down, got 2 inches, and got clipped by a flash knockdown. So we'll be sitting here discrediting Errol Spence. If he would have went in there and walked Mikey down, it would have been like, oh, he weight bullying. Oh, you know, Mikey shouldn't have been in there with him. He's just strong, and we would have still questioned his boxing IQ and can he box? Is he a pressure fighter? And he answered the question. He can do multiple things.
Okay. We were also talking about Scully's matchup, Benavidez getting his fight. and we were talking about the light heavyweight division. And Scully brought something out that all of the light heavyweight champions are Russian or Eastern Bloc. What was your thoughts on that, or had you even considered that when we talk about, you know, the how the Eastern Bloc countries have made great strides within the last few years?
That's for you, Javon.
Well, are you saying that the promoters are more into the European fighters, or?
No, I'm saying the result. You got four champions in the light heavyweight division that are all Russians or Eastern Bloc. You go down to some of the other weight classes. You got some other Russian or Eastern Bloc champions. So what I'm saying is, you know, how effective do you think the Eastern Bloc fighters are, and especially in the light heavyweight division, where Americans usually dominate?
Well, JK, I think what is happening, and this is just my opinion, the reason why that we take a look at our networks, right? The networks, how they call these fights. Like, we have an American heavyweight champion that, you know, nobody got behind. Nobody supported. You didn't have announcers backing him and jumping up for joy the same way they was with Chocolito and with Lomachenko and all that stuff like that. And I think if the commentary was not as biased and them jumping on these hype jobs, then we will probably get more American fighters getting recognition, because we have a lot of American champions in different weight classes, but they're just not getting the notoriety or the recognition that they're supposed to. You know, prime example, the other after the Errol Spence victory, your man, De La Hoya, put a Twitter message out and told Errol, if you want to make real money, come and sign with me and let me be your promoter. And did you hear Errol Spence respond? He said, no, thank you. You don't promote, or you don't treat black fighters well. So what does that say about the game? Was he lying? Can we sit here? Can you tell me what African American champion that De La Hoya has created or groomed or put on his card or pushed to be like, oh, you know, this is a great fighter? No. What he does is wait till somebody get good and then want to jump on the bandwagon. Just like how he tried to re-sign Wilder. Oh, let me promote you now because you're not getting the fights that you're supposed to get, and nobody know who you are. You get what I'm saying? So it has a lot to do with these promoters. It has a lot to do with with these commentators on how they're presenting the sport to the public.
Scully, what do you think?
Hey, you know, that's not a bad observation at all. You know, and the fact is, I'll tell you, like, TV is so powerful. The power of suggestion is powerful in that, and as far back as I can remember, you know, I remember as a kid watching the fights on the weekends, and there were certain guys that I was really attracted to and really thought were good. And I realize now, you know, it's because the announcers told me so. Like, they told me they were good. You know, I didn't know if they were good, but that's what I heard, and that's what I was told. You know, it's just like the media today with anything. They can manipulate you psychologically, subconsciously, to make you go for something that may not even be 100% true, but you hear it enough times, and that's what you're led to believe. So I think there's definitely some validity to that when you put it in those terms. Yes.
Well, hey, Scully, you know, as always, man, you know, it's good to have you back. And how soon before you going back up north?
I'm hoping probably next week. That's probably the plan. I'm just waiting to hear back and get my schedule situated. But I do want to, just before I go, I just want to let you guys know, I talk to Michael Nunn almost every day. We're in close contact. I'm doing an event in New York City in the Bronx in May. It looks like May 19th. I'll keep you up to date on it. It's called the main thing is the Run with the Champs, which Ring 10 does. And all kinds of fighters go, and they go to this country club in the Bronx, and you pay $10 and you can run on this track with the champs and eat barbecue and do different things. That's what happens every year. So what I'm doing is I'm having it coincide with an amateur boxing reunion that's going to draw, you know, all kinds of guys. And so the major plan right now is to have Michael Nunn come there on that day and be with us. So the day before in the city somewhere, probably at a restaurant or maybe a hotel, we're going to do an event with myself, Michael, Iran Barkley, Dennis Milton, Marlon Starling, and let me see, there was one other guy I wanted to put in the mix because we all fought none at one point, either in the amateurs or in the pros. So we're going to do something with that. I believe there was five of us that fought him. So we're going to do something with the five of us, and then the following day we're going to do the event in the Bronx. So all the proceeds will go towards Ring 10, which is the organization I'm involved with in New York City, which helps fighters. I know I've talked about them before. They actually help fighters like Gerald McClellan and Wilfred Benitez. I know for a fact, for example, I've told you before, but they buy the groceries. They pay for the groceries for Gerald McClellan every month. You know, they have an account at the supermarket near Gerald's house, and all Gerald's family has to do is go get the groceries, which Ring 10 pays for. So that's going to be in May. I believe it's May 19th. But I'll keep you guys up to date on it. And Jabron, you know, you're more than welcome to come hang out. It's going to be a spectacular day. So I definitely want you guys to be aware of that.
Okay, quick question, Scully. Did you get the update on Better Arthur with his promotional deal? Looks like he's going to be rolling with Uncle Bob.
That's what I've got from it. And as we said earlier, he's fighting the kid Hot Rod. I don't think you were on the line when we talked about that. But I actually sparred the kid Hot Rod. He's the guy that fought Marcus Brown a couple years ago, and he dropped Marcus a couple times. So he's fighting Arthur on that day. Arthur's signed with Top Rank. So, you know, big things hopefully are going to happen right now if he can just stay injury-free and, you know, contract issues-free. You know, things should be moving forward on a big scale from now on.
All right. Sounds great, Scully.
All right, guys. So I guess I'll be talking to you next week.
Hey, and don't forget, you know, give us your final thoughts and make sure everybody knows where to find you on social media.
Yes, sir. Well, always Facebook, John the Iceman Scully, or Iceman John Scully. I have two different accounts, and Iceman John Scully on Twitter and Instagram. Always talking boxing, and you know, just I'm excited about going back to Montreal with Arthur, and I'm going to actually Puerto Rico in early June with Trinidad. He has a foundation called Working for the World. He helps raise money for cancer patients and homeless, orphans on the island. So we're going to do a 5K run in Caguas in Puerto Rico in early June. and the proceeds from that will go towards those events. So I'll keep you guys up to date on all these activities on the next show, and we'll hype it up.
All right, Scully, thank you so much, my man. You have a great night, and we look forward to talking with you next week.
All right, guys. Have a good night. Thank you.
Bye. Well, you know, Professor, we always talk about ladies boxing, and we try to do as much with ladies as we can. I was talking with Melissa Smith, and she was telling me about this program out here in California called Beautiful Brawlers. And I was looking in on my Facebook page, and I crossed it, so I decided to give them a call. So we have the founder of Beautiful Brawlers on the line right now. Bianca, how are you doing tonight?
Good, James. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you wanting to know about the Beautiful Brawlers. I'm doing great, thanks.
So before I get, you know, keep butchering your name, why don't you introduce yourself to us and tell us a little bit about your background.
Okay, my name is Blanca Gutierrez. I'm over 50 now. My father was a boxer. He was inducted in the West Coast or the California Hall of Fame in 2011. He was a pioneer in the 1950s. His name was Javier Babyface Gutierrez. So I grew up born and bred in a boxing family, but I really didn't box until I was in my late 20s, because back when I was starting to box, they didn't really take women too seriously yet. So I became a kickboxer, and after, you know, about 25 smokers and fights and a little bit of boxing fights, I got too old for the sport as far as how I'd want to compete. And I created something called the Beautiful Brawlers, where I have all female shows. And I do that because I want to give females a fair shot and an exposure to, for the younger ones to get treated. It's kind of a bit like the pros, because I want them to get that red carpet treatment, because they put a lot of work into the sport and I want them to be taken seriously. So I created a show that sets a platform to show all the best amateur female boxing. And I believe in the world, because we have them come from all over the place. So that's who I am, and that's what we created, the Beautiful Brawlers. And we're on our ninth show, August 31st.
Now, you know, we've talked about, you know, the influence of social media and whatnot in the pros. But I see you have a very strong program. As I said, you know, I went on Facebook and saw some of your posts and your history and whatnot. So how has this impacted your in your particular area of women's boxing, and especially women's amateur boxing?
Well, what it has done, as far as the Beautiful Brawlers, created a hub of female sparring and female camps where girls would come from all over to spar. And it started that way because I went around with Martha Salazar back in the day. We started scouting shows because there was never females on shows, but there was always females who wanted to fight. So we started creating a list. And then we built it out of love, you know. We went by the different coaches and told them what we were doing, because before there used to be this idea that you should not have your boxers spar if they're females. They kind of hide them from each other, but women weren't growing. So I made a more of a network situation out here where people should spar. The more visibility you get, you know who's out there, and then it was really built on love and the fact that these girls wanted to bang. They wanted to throw down, and they didn't want to hold back, you know. So that's what we do. And a lot of the girls out here and in Southern California and in Vegas come out here, and they all work together. So they all know each other. Right now they're at the Nationals competing, and they all know each other. They've all sparred with each other. They know what they're in for.
So you don't just particularly take care of California. You do bring fighters in from all over?
From all over, but no, we do take care of Northern California because once what happened was is I started going, I went to the Nationals, I'd say about when it was in Reno, last time it was in Reno, and I'd actually been opening sparring and shows to all the girls, you know, and when I went out there, I noticed that I should probably be watching now Northern California and bumping them up because that's where I'm from. And so we do a lot, and especially this year, it was a good camp. It was a smaller camp. And our girls from Northern California, they really shine. I mean, we have Lupe Gutierrez, who was a 2015 gold medal champion, who's now 19 and in the elites. Mariana Gonzalez, who's was a 119-pounder, now going for the Olympic division. The Olympic division has changed a lot this year. So, yeah, I've been pushing Northern California, and I'm doing that because I want an Olympian out of Northern California. It would be an incredible thing. And we also have Alexis Gomez in the 165-pound division coming out of Northern California that is about to show the world who she is at the Nationals. So we're pushing Northern California. I am this year. You're right.
Professor, you want to chime in here for a second or two?
I think it is wonderful idea that they came up with in this whole program. Shout out to women. Really making a statement in the sport of boxing. I don't know if you guys paid attention this weekend, but to my knowledge, we had the first female calling a fight play-by-play on national television on ESPN. Was y'all knowledgeable of that?
Well, that's a great thing. You know what? Which fight was that, by the way?
It was on the top rank ESPN card. It was on one of the prelims. She was calling the play-by-play. I forgot the young lady name, but she did an excellent job. And I'm looking forward to y'all making a big stamp in the sport in the next couple of years. And I applaud you for that.
Thank you. You know what it is a lot of these women, including myself and all my friends, we're really passionate about boxing. And for a lot of us, it's in our blood. And so it runs through our veins pretty deep, and we love it. It makes us happy. It's one of those things you become addicted to.
Most definitely. Just a quick question.
The number you have dialed is not answering.
Hello?
Hello?
Good.
Oh, yeah. We have a big clash in the women's boxing, which was the middleweight division, and Clarissa Shields. I would just like your quick thought on that fight between her and Christina Hammer, and does it make your juices flow for that fight because of the animosity between the two young ladies?
It definitely does, and I'm a huge Clarissa Shields fan. Everybody knows that, and I'm not just a fan. She's come out of the amateurs. You know, and a lot of the pros say, well, you know, she has to pay her dues, but she has triple or quadruple the amount of fights as most people because she's been in the sport since she's been a little girl, won the Olympics twice. Nobody's done that. And she's a great role model for all her girls. And I'm for United States, and I want Clarissa to win, and I think Hammer's going to give her a great fight. But in the end, there's only going to be one winner. It's not going to be a draw. And I hope Hammer's ready. You know, I know that she pulled out of the fight before saying she was sick. And I hope she's recovered because she's going to need to be 100% for this fight because Clarissa's going to make a statement and she wants those belts. She's hungry.
Now, with the All Program, is that only on the West Coast, or are y'all nationwide throughout the United States?
Well, we have beautiful brawlers champions that are nationwide. We also have a champion in Puerto Rico, and we have one in Canada. And when we throw shows, it was an invitational show at first, Now we've been opening it more to anybody who wants to come in, but we put mostly the best fighters we can find on the card, and we put the best against the best. So we have nationwide, but, you know, they know it's worldwide because a lot of girls want to come by here. They see our social media, and they feel like they already know us, and I put a lot of clips on our training and our funny stuff, too, like when we're joking around. We're all pretty funny. I mean, and we have a lot of fun doing this. It isn't just punching each other. We punch each other, have fun, and do other stuff, too. So it's a great program, and we are known worldwide, and I'd like to have a show somewhere else, but we do have an international team, so we do more traveling now as a team. And we're making ourselves more known worldwide. If you look on our website, www.babyfaceboxing.com, you can pull up our team, and it'll show you which girls we have on our team. And they're all great fighters. They're entertaining, too. We like to have entertaining fighters on our team. And, you know, that's why we like Clarissa Shields so much, because she talks a lot. She makes herself known, and she could box and back it up, you know. So we have a team like that, and I think it's just the beginning for us. I think we're going to get bigger, and go to our website and you can see what we do.
Now, with this new day and age with the applications, the ESPN Plus, the DAZN, now we have fights on Facebook and Twitter. Just give me your thoughts on perspective that can be for your boxing program, and are y'all looking to utilize any of those platforms?
Yeah, well, we go live on Facebook on our best fights. I've also used live stream. During our first few shows, we used live stream, but when it was first coming out, you know, when everybody logged on to Wi-Fi, it would log out, you know. So there's so many better streamings now, and you know, it's almost easy to use it straight off Instagram or straight off Facebook. So it's easier for us because we don't have a big budget to do that. But it's amazing that DAZN is doing what they're doing, and I really like them. And if we could be like them one day, that would be awesome. But, I mean, they're just incredible. It's beating out everything else right now to be able to get these live streams. So, yeah, we'll use them when we can. But we do have a budget.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. I think that's all I have for right now, and I'll throw it back to JK.
Well, thank you for having us, and appreciate it.
Now make sure you tell us who can find you on social media and we find us you have for.
Well, the best thing, James, is we're on www.babyfaceboxing.com if you want to register to be on our show August 31st. It's an all-female show. We're going to be in conjunction with the International Women's Boxing Hall of Fame, which is the day ahead, August 30th, with Sue Fox, and it's going to be a great show, and it'll tell you more about the Beautiful Brawlers. And on Facebook, we're Beautiful Brawlers. And on Instagram, we're Beautiful Brawlers. We're just Beautiful Brawlers everywhere you go. Look for us on shows, too.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. I want to just say one shout-out to all the Beautiful Brawlers that are out on the Nationals. I wish you guys good luck. I love you guys so much, and I wish I was there with you. And you all did a lot of hard work, and I'm looking to see some big wins at the end of the week. I'll talk to you guys soon. Thank you.
All right. You have a great night, Austin.
Thanks, James. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You have a great show.
Bye.
Well, Professor, it's been a little while. I'm still expecting Mr. Dinkins to come on, hopefully. Mr. Dinkins, he also runs a show out here in Southern California. Hey, man, it's been a pretty good weekend. Right now, we're watching boxing right now. We got Fox Sports Friday night. We had ESPN Friday night. So, hey, man, what do you think about that? I mean, even though we saw Jesse Magdaleno, we have been seeing some other fighters. We, you know, you watched the prelims for here. We saw Brandon Quarles, even though he went down. We saw some other fighters. We're seeing three fights tonight. So how are people talking about, man, it's just not that time yet?
It was a great weekend. I ain't going to say all great fights, but it was a great weekend of boxing coming from every angle. You had them on TV. You had them on the apps. You had them on Facebook. So, I mean, they was just everywhere. So it's great for the sport. It's showing that the sport is growing. But the head of the news right now is Manny Pacquiao is moonwalking on that decision that he made just a week ago about Errol Spence. It seems like he done changed his tune.
I agree with that.
This is Mr. Donald Dinkins. He was on the show one weekend, Professor, when you weren't around. So, Mr. DeBron Clemens, meet Mr. Donald Dinkins.
Good evening, sir.
Well,
how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good to hear. Good to hear. You guys watching the fight tonight?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, I was before I got on the show. I was listening to it because the wife hit me with a last minute errand run, so I'm out and about. But
mine is in here trying to mix some fruit or some vegetables and stuff around in the mixer while I'm while I'm on the phone.
But I did just hear that Anthony Peterson, they got a draw.
Yes, yeah. He did get a draw, and I'll give my opinion, and then Mr. Dinkins, you can get yours, because I thought it was a draw. I didn't think that Anthony did enough. I think he did too much running. He should have stood and fought at some point, especially in the later rounds. I think the judges took off for that and gave Mendez a draw on effective aggression. Mr. Dinkins.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I don't know what Anthony's problem was, especially at home. I thought he was going to be a little more aggressive than that. And he did. He spent more time showboating and running to his corner and skipping around the ring and doing every other thing else instead of fighting the guy. I mean, he said he's been off for a long period of time, so, and he looked like he was in pretty good condition, so I was expecting a whole lot more from him. I know his brother doesn't fight like that. I mean, there were times when he walked the guy down and he was throwing some punches, but then as soon as the guy approached him, you know, he was like, he put a little scamper up in him, you know, and he was gone just like that.
You know, Professor, I got to ask you. You know, it's kind of like, you know, we got brothers on the card this time, and we had the Charlo twins on the card, and it seemed like one twin or brother underperformed, and that had a profound impact on the older brother or the brother that was fighting later. We kind of have the same situation where Anthony has gotten a draw, and you could kind of see it on Juan's face when they were showing it back and forth, you know, how concerned he was that Anthony wasn't exploiting. So do you think that this is going to be a repeat of the same, or,
no,
or do you think that perhaps, you know, we shouldn't, you know, like, I don't think we'll ever see the Charlo twins on another card together. Do you think this might be the same for the Peterson brothers?
No. I think Lamont's going to fight. Lamont, he has a little more fight in him than his brother does. And I think as far as this, when he saw his brother underperforming, you would think that would have been a source of motivation. You know, not that was no reason for him to slacken off. He should want to go up there and really perform after that. I was surprised that Charlo didn't perform the way he should have.
What are your thoughts, Professor?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't know as far as Anthony and Lamont, as far as will it affect Lamont. It could, but I've stated before on the show, the last couple of fights Lamont has fought, I have questioned his decision-making inside of the ring. Because it's like he done the opposite of what he's supposed to do. Prime example, we go to Danny Garcia fight. He comes out, runs around the ring for the first six rounds, and then decide, all right, I'm here to fight now. Mm-hmm. And then he walks Danny down, and which is a fight I felt that he could have won if he wouldn't have been dancing so much in the beginning of the fight. Now, the fight where he should have been dancing and using his stick was the Earl fight. And he walked straight in with earmuffs, and I can't understand that game plan. Because I know Lamont is a better fighter than that. You trying to tell me Mikey could go 12 rounds and Lamont can't? I ain't buying that. Lamont can go 12 rounds with Earl. It was just a horrible game plan.
Yeah, and it seemed like, I don't, it was almost as if Lamont didn't think that Spencer's going to beat him up like that. You know, like it's like a, almost like a sparring session. You know, I walk in and trade punches with this guy, you know, and this and that and the other. But, you know, he just seemed, I don't know what was on his mind, period.
Well, guys, you know, now, we're very good friends with Barry Hunter. But do you think that maybe Barry came out with the wrong game plan? Or do you think that, you know, maybe you have to, you know, they say everything changes after you get that first punch. Do you think that that was maybe the you know, what happened here? Or do you think that Barry just didn't come in with the right game plan against those two opponents?
I don't know if that was
Barry. Is that for me?
I don't know if it was Barry's game plan, but from the first bell, if you go back and watch the fight, when the bell rang, Lamont ran to the center of the ring and put a high guard up. He ain't got hit yet. That was his intention from the bell ring. He put a high guard up and stood there and waited on Earl.
Yeah, he ran up there like he was Terrence Ali, didn't he?
Right. I'm like, I thought he was about to let his hands go, but that wasn't the case.
Right. I'll tell you, I'm a boxing coach, man, and I can't understand these guys, period. You know, you can train a certain way. Like I mentioned to Jim a week ago when we talked, my fighter's making his debut on the 19th of next month. Now, I have no idea what's going to happen once the bell rings. And when people ask me, is your boy ready, all I can do is I tell them all the time, I know what he can do and I know what he should do, but I don't know what he will do until he does it. And that's the makeup of a fighter. You just don't know.
Now, I have a question for you. I'm glad you brought that point up, because what is your thoughts on Mr. Deontay Wilder in the sense of, do you feel that he depends solely on his power to the point where, I feel that he's not coachable going forward?
Well, is that for me?
Yes,
sir.
Okay. Well, you know what? I think Deontay Wilder's attitude is, if it ain't broke, why, you know, don't fix it. And at this point, I don't see him getting any better. And Mark Breland is one of the most technically sound fighters ever. And you would think that you know, his protege would have would have rubbed off on him, but it does rely strictly on his power. And that part is unusual because he's not that big. I mean, he has a big punch, but when you look at his weight, it's not like he's 260-something pounds, like a Klitschko or something. You know, and when he gets hit, like when Peter hit him, you know, I mean, he got shook pretty bad. And he needs to learn some fundamentals. I don't know if it's too late or what, because you find guys, I've had fighters who are a knockout artist, you know, knockout guys real quick, but and they feel that they didn't have to do a lot of road work, you know, because the fight's not going to last. So maybe that's what Wilder's attitude is.
Yeah, but you saying if it's broke, don't fix it. But it is broke because he just got outboxed.
Well, it's hard to say it is broke if he's 39 and 0 and 1. You know, that's his attitude. He still is not broken.
Well, I think the best thing that happened to him was the Fury rematch not happening, because I really think Fury in this fight would have definitely boxed him up, because the simple fact, he's felt this power, and he know how dangerous he is, so he won't play as much as he was in the first fight. He'll be more paying attention to detail.
Yeah, you would hope so.
And if you look at him physically, he's in tremendous shape now since the Wilder fight. He's dropped another maybe 20 pounds.
Oh, you're talking about Fury?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
so
I don't know if Fury. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think Fury not facing him was beneficial to Deontay to possibly tweak some things. And for Fury to, build his U.S. popularity.
Yeah, right. Well, he's got to come fight coming up in Vegas, I think, Fury.
Yes, that is
And I think Wilder's fight could be a pretty tough fight, even though Brazil doesn't have much of a chin, he does have a punch.
Can we talk about those three matchups? And the first one, Joshua against Big Baby. Now, Big Baby is Big Baby. I mean, I doubt very seriously if we're going to see a Big Baby come in there under 240 pounds. More, I'd say more like 250, 260. And he can move at that weight. But...
Mm-hmm.
We've seen Joshua get hit by big punchers, and, now I don't know, because he's kind of fluctuating between weights. So, I mean, when he comes out and tries, what do you think he's going to do against Big Baby? Do you think he's going to try to bulk up, or do you think he's going to try to use speed?
Well, I don't think he's going to make any big-time changes for this guy, because Big Baby is not that hard of a puncher. For a guy his size, he's not a big puncher. He doesn't punch as hard as Joshua, even though he outweighs Joshua by quite a bit. And I think that Joshua's going to just go ahead and let him have his little, he'll probably get a 3 or 4 rounds under his belt, but I think once Joshua starts going forward and hitting Big Baby, I think he'll stop him. I think he'll stop him within 10 rounds.
Professor?
This is such a tough fight for me, because the simple fact, we haven't seen Big Baby get hit yet, like really hit by somebody with major power. So I have to see how he can take a punch. But just based on his punch output, his size, stature, looking at Joshua, this could be a very difficult fight for Joshua, because the simple fact, he cut all those muscles down. He's working more on being more agile and flexible. And mentally, I think the Klitschko fight took something out of Joshua, because if you notice, ever since the Klitschko fight, he's been more of a boxer puncher instead of just, a power hitter. He's more on the outside. I felt like he could have easily got Parker out of there, and he was too tentative, because I feel psychologically it was in his head that, I don't want to get knocked down again. I don't want to be on the canvas anymore. So I think and Joshua has stamina problems, which Big Baby is very well conditioned. And one thing that I've noticed about the European fighters, I could do Debbie. I think Joshua.
That's it, right?
Yeah. I think Joshua is a little bit, like I said, psychologically, he's a little gun-shy in a sense. Because if you look at even at the Povetkin fight, when he got his nose busted, if you would have seen the look in his face, it wasn't a very confident look. It was like, man, I got to get my stuff together or I'm going to be out of here. It wasn't a confident look. And I'm seeing that he can be hurt. He can definitely be hurt. And when you got 300 pounds leaning on you and clenching you, something that he's not accustomed to, I think that could wear him out because we know Joshua has stamina problems. And European fighters are not good inside fighters. If you watch a European or a UK fight, look how many times they clinch. They don't clinch a lot. They don't do a lot of inside fighting where one hand is held and the other one is free and you letting your hands go. They don't do that. If you notice, they get frustrated. Triple G don't like inside fighting. So I think if Big Baby put that pressure and get on the inside, he's going to make it a long night for Joshua. And that's all I have on that.
Well, I don't think Big Baby's gonna put a whole lot of pressure on Joshua. I think I haven't seen a whole lot of Big Baby. I don't know if he's been tested. We do know that Whitaker can get hit and he can get up off the floor. He was hit. He should have been out in that fight against Klitschko. Now, so I don't know if Big Baby if he has the kind of power to put him down like that. And he's just a question mark to me. He's an enigma to me. If I had to put money on him, my money wouldn't be on him. I mean, if I had seen him fight a rated contender, I mean, who has he really fought? Who really has he beaten that has a name?
I really think that I'm kind of like the professor on this one. I think it'll be a test. I'm really starting to doubt Joshua's stamina. And maybe if Big Baby can last and lean on him and get past those 10 rounds that you're talking about, Mr. Dinkins, then it might be a good fight those last two rounds if Big Baby can last. But we'll see.
And one other thing I left out.
Okay.
Yeah. Out of all the opponents Joshua faced, how many opponents have he faced that was agile as a Big Baby? I'm talking about turning at the waist like a James Toney. So when you got those big muscles and you throwing those punches and they ain't landing, you know you're going to get tired. So,
well, I agree with that, and that's the way it is with a lot of muscle-bound fighters. Even Ken Norton was like that. George Foreman was like that. You know, if you can survive an early onslaught, even though I'm not saying they're the same type of fighters, but I mean physically, you know, those guys with the big muscles, they do have a tendency to get a little arm-weary after, you know, five or six rounds.
Right, and Big Baby Miller averages like 82 punches a round. Can Joshua keep that pace up? And fight on the back foot because Big Baby's gonna come forward. And the thing is, with Big Baby, even though he come forward, he's doing his James Toney impression. He's bobbing, he's weaving, moving at the waist. He's not giving you that look. A lot of Joshua opponents is right in front of him, and the person that wasn't in front of him, we saw what happened. He went 12 rounds with Joseph Parker.
No, but Parker, yeah, I didn't think much of Parker at all.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Joseph ain't all that great, and he went 12. Joshua went 12 rounds with that guy.
Oh, I'm not saying he's great, not by any stretch of the imagination. But I just don't, I just haven't seen enough of Big Baby. Maybe I need to go back and look at some of his tapes. But he seems to be almost like a Buster Mathis type to me. You know, he's more physical or more agile for his size than you think he would be. He's like a little fat boy, you know, but he's deceptive in that manner. So James Toney is too. But I just don't see him stopping Joshua. And if he's fighting over there, he's sure not going to. Were they fighting in New York?
Yeah, they're fighting in Madison Square Garden.
Oh, okay. Well, that could be a problem. That could be a problem for Joshua.
Right, and the psychological warfare. I mean, since this fight been announced, it's been going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
You see Big Baby telling him, told his mom, like, yeah, I'm going to still take you out on a date after the fight.
Get
under his skin. And you got to realize, Joshua, for this promotion, it's out of character. He's not being himself. Because in the UK, their thing is about being professional, and they don't curse, and they don't do – and you see not being himself. So psychologically, when that bell rings, he could exert a lot of energy because he's taking it personal.
That could very well be true. I've seen it happen
and
before.
And Big Baby, that's his game. He's the gift for gab. Anybody to know Big Baby, that's all he does is talk. So that's
another
nothing to him.
He's another Shannon Briggs.
Which will be back in action on June 15th. Shannon Briggs, Let's Go Champ, will be back in action June 15th, trying to get back in the heavyweight mix.
Are you serious? He chased Klitschko around like a lovesick schoolgirl, and now he's fighting again?
Yep.
Now, that's the person you ought to worry about having a stamina problem.
But he
has asthma, right?
Yeah, he has asthma.
Yeah, so I would be concerned about stamina problem with him.
Speaking of the heavyweight division, we had Khorrat Poulev fight this weekend, and he looked pretty decent. You know, he let his hands go finally, but.
Mm-hmm.
Do he really want to be great? Do he really want to be a champion? Because he can align himself as the IBF mandatory for Anthony Joshua's belt. But the gentleman said he would want to face an old-time rival from the amateurs.
Mm-hmm.
To get his revenge back instead of being the mandatory for Joshua. What are your thoughts on that?
And I think that's ridiculous. The amateurs are the amateurs. Leave that in the past. You know, I mean, you know, plenty of guys that beaten guys in the amateurs, and then you got to the pros, and it was a totally different story. But most guys don't worry about that. You know, they know that it's a different game. Put Pulev in there with Chris Areola. I'll make you laugh on that.
Well, Chris Areola looked great last week in great shape.
Great. Yes, he did. I was going to ask you guys about that because I was expecting that sloppy Chris Areola to come in and you know, put on that performance and you know, go back, collect his check, and go back to wherever he went. But actually, Chris came out. He looked very good. He had lost some weight, and he put on a very good performance. We had Mr. John Ruiz on the show, and I always thought that Chris would be the next Latino heavyweight champion. But you know, we've seen how that's turned out. Do you think that you know? Looking at the landscape, did Chris see something that, you know, maybe he missed? Or do you think that we have so many damn belts now that, you know, he figures he can grab one and you know, make a name for himself? I mean, you know, he could be the 10 champ in the IBF, the diamond champ in the WBC. I mean, you know. What do you think about that, Mr. Dinkins?
Well, I've known Chris since he was an amateur. I had guys fight Chris when he was in the amateurs. He was a little skinny kid. I've known he and his trainer, Henry Ramirez. I've known those guys from years ago. And to tell you a real quick story, I hadn't seen Chris in quite a while, and I was training my fighters down at the Hoover Street gym, and I was just standing up on the edge of the ring, and somebody walked up behind me and grabbed me, you know, and I mean, they were big, strong, you know, I thought it was Scrap Iron Johnson or somebody, and I'm looking down, and then I turned around, and he leaned that old big head of his over there, he said, "What's up, Don?" And I still didn't know who he was because he was too close to me. The one I thought I was looking at the moon or something. And then his trainer, Henry, got up and walked over and said, "Hey, Don, that boy got big, didn't he?" And he said, "Yeah," he says, "Chris Don Cristobal." That's what he called himself, Cristobal Ariel. I said, "Man, are you serious? I remember you as a little 90-pound amateur, you know." And the fight, and when he had his first, he made his debut in Laughlin on the same night that I had a fight on that card. And as a matter of fact, I wrapped his hands for that fight because Henry at that time had never had a professional fighter, so he didn't even know how to wrap the guy's hands. But that's how, you know, that's how we were. I've known each other. We've known each other for years. Now, I would say Chris has had a lot of chances. He's had his, you know, he's had like 4 shots at the title, which is unusual. But from what I know about Chris, he's not one of those guys who's consumed with being the best. You know, he's just not. I think he maybe he's a bit of an overachiever, and he got to a certain point, and that's good enough for me. And then I'm gonna stop training for a while. And I was at the gym over at Goosen's gym once when they had Showtime over there when he was going to fight Adamack or Klitschko, one of the two, and they were all set up for him for 24/7. He didn't even show up that day. You know, and Henry kept telling me, he said, "Don, you know how these, I'm sorry, man, because I came over there to do a story on him." And I said, "Man, you don't have to apologize. You can't control these fighters." And he just didn't show up that day. And he's always come back, with a new attitude. "Oh, I'm serious. This time sounding like Broner." You know, and the guy he fought the last time, it seemed like the guy didn't want to fight. So my jury is still out on Chris. I need to see him fight somebody. I mean, he was in pretty, he's better condition, but the best I've ever seen Chris, well, I was at the fight when he fought Seth, I don't know what his last name was, but he knocked him out in the first round. He looked super that night, but I've never seen him look that good since. I was there when he fought Stavern, you know, when he got knocked out, and I've been at quite a few of his fights.
Professor, what do you think?
Yeah, that was the former football player, Seth Mitchell.
Yeah, Seth Mitchell, that's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, he has a point. You know, he never really dedicated himself to the sport. You know, he reminds me kind of a heavyweight Brandon Rios. Like, has so much potential to be great, but they never took the sport serious enough and mm-hmm. dedicated themselves to where they could have been elite inside of the ring. They had heart, but they didn't have the brain.
Mm-hmm. And like Jim said, he could have been the first Mexican Latino champion. You would think he would have been consumed with that, but it wasn't that big a deal to him. Chavez Jr. the same way.
Now I want to talk about this last matchup because now, you know, the way you guys talk about, you know, Chris, somebody not really being dedicated, and I've seen quite a few of this gentleman's fights, and I actually have called in everything from the Marshmallow Man to the Michelin Man, and I'm talking about Dominic Brazil because even though he has a winning record, he's never impressed me. To me, he's a heavy bag with two legs.
Yeah.
Now, you know, maybe that's a wrong assessment, but I don't see, other than him being the mandatory, I see no reason for him to give Wilder any trouble at all. I mean, half the time he's going to spend with a high guard and, you know, trying to fight his way out of a corner. So, Mr. Dickens, you can go first and tell us what you expect out of Dominic Brazil.
Well, I've been to 3 or 4 of Dominic's fights, and every fight he's been in, he's gotten hurt at some point in the fight. I've been there. I've seen him fight guys who short, fat guys who would hit him on the chin. It's almost like they close their eyes and swing it overhand right and hit him on the chin, and he would wobble. So I know the first time Wilder touches him, it's going to be over. Now the only thing I think is if maybe Brazil, he's big and he's strong enough and he can fight a little bit, he can punch a little bit. He's and they supposed to have this little thing going where they just, you know, the skirmish that broke out in Las Vegas, you know, maybe he'll carry that into the ring, maybe that'll fire him up. Who knows? But I'm looking for the first time he gets hit on the chin, he's going to get knocked out.
Professor?
Oh, I was on mute. Sorry, I was on mute. So, I think, I think it's going to be similar to the Stavern fight. It'll probably go like three rounds. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe three rounds. And because it's going to be an emotional fight. It's emotional because they have a past history. It's emotional.
Right.
And I think the mentality that Wilder has, like he said in the press conference, he's going to try to punch through Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so he got his guard up all he wants, but he's going to punch through it or around it. And I don't know if he's going to be able to withstand that power like that. But I will say he has a solid, decent punch. And Wilder can get stunned. You know, I've seen him get stunned, not just the Luis Ortiz. I saw Spilker hit him with some shots. I've seen some people hit him. Andy Ruiz.
King.
I've seen Andy Ruiz hit him with something.
Fought Wilder?
So,
yeah.
Was it Andy? Not Andy Ruiz. Not Andy Ruiz. Oh, man. His face is right. Oh, man. Anyway, I can't remember the guy's name.
The Cuban guy. The Cuban guy.
King Kong?
Yeah.
King Kong heard him, but it was some fights way before that. Andy Ruiz undefeated, that I think about it. I think Andy Ruiz.
Right. There was a guy from Bakersfield. I can't think of his name, but he shook Wilder in a fight. I can't think of that guy's name, but I know he's from Bakersfield or somewhere up there.
Yeah, so he can be stunned. He can be hurt. But like I said, I see Wilder retaining his belt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the heavyweight division, man, I'm excited because it's so much going on. We still don't know what's about to happen with Dillian White. Will he be with ESPN and possibly get another fight at Tyson Fury, or will he go back with The Zone and Sky Sports?
Right.
You know, and he can be the next fight for Wilder because remember, it was a big thing with Brazil and Dillian White about who's supposed to be the mandatory or the number one with the WBC. So maybe after this fight, if they don't get the Joshua fight, they will definitely probably get the Dillian White fight unless you know, he makes a deal with a certain network.
Right.
And, you know, the politics get involved and they can't make the fight.
And don't forget Charles Martin. Charles Martin is back now.
Oh, yeah, Charles Martin is back. I still think he needs some more fights under his belt. But he's shown that he's gotten better. I was proud of him in the Adam Kornacki fight. He showed a lot of heart. He showed that, you know, he put himself in a little better condition. And in this past, this last fight that he just had, you know. So, the heavyweight division. Then you got Buatsi from over the UK and the gentleman that just fought, Joe Joyce. Usyk. We got Usyk fighting Takam in May 18th. So undisputed cruiserweight champion will make his heavyweight debut May 18th versus Carlos Takam, which gave Anthony Joshua a tough
fight.
And he's been in there with the likes of, Povetkin, Chisora. Like, he's been in there with some top
competition. He's been in there with you. He's been tested.
Yeah, so this is definitely a good gauge for Usyk. I see that their team kind of scaled it back because the opponent was supposed to have been Alexander Povetkin. But they see that, hey, he's only lost to Klitschko and Joshua, and he's a game fighter, and he got power. So I don't think they want to take that chance in his first fight into the heavyweight division.
Yeah, and now that you since you mentioned Klitschko's name, they say, you know, there's talk about him coming back.
Yeah, right now, Usyk is in camp with Klitschko right now.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. They have a pit. They put up a picture yesterday in the gym together.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about heavyweights, as you said, you know, Wilder's turned down a big chunk of money from one of the streaming networks. But when you have and Mr. Dinkins, this is kind of aimed at you because the professor and I have talked about this before. When you have these heavyweights that are signed to certain companies for long-term fights, such as Fury has, I think, an 8-fight deal. I think Joshua has a 10-fight deal.
Mm-hmm.
What does this say to the quality of the opponents that we
see
again when these guys are certain? You know, I mean, it's like Canelo, you know, signing this long-term deal. How many chances are these streaming companies or networks going to take with their golden gooses?
That's right. Exactly. And, you know, that stuff started with Floyd Mayweather started that kind of stuff when he signed that contract, and they gave him like six or seven opponents. I mean, of course they're going to protect their interests, you know. And I mean, it's bad enough that guys are not fighting guys that they should fight anyway. But then when you have people sign them to these long-term deals, they're going to make sure they don't fight anybody that they shouldn't fight. I mean, it's a mess. It really is, and that's the part of fighting, boxing. As much as I love the sport, that's what I hate about it. I mean, all the politics that's being involved. But they talk about, oh yeah, Canelo said he'll fight Ward, he'll fight what's the name, the light heavyweight champion, you know, Kovalev, he'll fight. Man, the people say, hey. Let's not call out all those names like that. We got you under a 10-fight deal. You know, those guys are not in the mix.
And what do you think is to use a different phrase, what do you think is the trickle-down effect to the casual fan who already comes in that's skeptical about our sport?
Yeah. I think the casual fan is going to be turned off by something like that, period. I mean, people getting to the point that you guys are making all this money, man. We want to see you fight the best guys. Nobody wanted to see Canelo gaining a 168-pound title fighting somebody that we've never heard of. That's ridiculous. People don't even want to see – they're not even that crazy. They're not even talking about Pacquiao fighting Mayweather again. I mean, this kind of stuff is just ridiculous.
Professor, you have some last questions or observations of Mr. Dinkins?
I have a question. Have you guys discussed the Spence and Garcia fight? Did I miss that part?
No. Well, we did discuss it, but we can. You know, I mean, we all came to. Mr. Scully was saying that he thought that Errol didn't take enough chances, he thought Errol should have tried to knock him out. DeBron, he had a different take on it. Professor, you want to tell Mr. Dinkins your take, and then Mr. Dinkins, you can kind of give your observations.
Sure. So, you know, when Scully was saying, you know, he felt that, Errol should have put his foot on the gas, got him out of there, this and things like that, you know, I had to rebuttal that because that's exactly – like, Errol was in a lose-lose situation because now, if he would have went in that ring and walked Mikey down and got Mikey out of there, we would have been saying, oh, we still don't know if Errol can box. Will he be able to beat the likes of a Terrence Crawford or a Keith Thurman, who's a superior boxer? He just goes and mauls guys. And Earl showed you that, look, I'm a total package fighter. So he didn't want to make the mistake, which I stated earlier, happened yesterday. A gentleman was winning every second of a fight and showboated and got knocked out in the last 10 seconds yesterday. So Earl did what he's supposed to do, was he won every round, he got the belt and retained it, got his check, and went home.
And one thing for sure is that oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's all I had on it. I just feel like, you know, they just because he was fighting a smaller man, they taking credit away from him.
Yeah,
his
sure they are.
Ability.
Yeah, and I think Earl's a little sensitive too, you know, because number one, we all know from trainer standpoint that some fighters are not there to be knocked out. I mean, if you don't give me something to work with, the odds of me knocking you out is not going to be, you know, they're going to be diminished. And Mikey, and my opinion before the fight was that the first time Earl really puts his hands on Mikey, Mikey's going to realize that he should have listened to his brother, and that, you know, it's going to be a whole new experience for him. And I haven't watched the whole fight yet, but from the highlights I've seen and the people I've talked to, Mikey felt the power early, and he went into a completely defensive posture. And guys like that, it's hard to knock him out. I don't care how good you are, it's hard to knock guys out like that. And Earl was going to look foolish going out there swinging like Wilder, you know, just to knock this guy out to satisfy somebody saying he should have knocked the guy out. And he went out there, and I think when he heard all this talk about he's supposed to be a lesser boxer and, you know, IQ and all this than Mikey was, I think he wanted to prove a point that I can outbox this guy. I can outthink this guy. It's almost like when Hagler fought Sugar Ray Leonard, he wanted to go out there to prove that he could outbox Leonard. He even went out there and fought right-handed, you know, and it seemed like Spence wanted to prove a point, saying I can do everything better than this guy. And maybe he just got caught up in that and said, okay, well, I'm winning handily, so there's no sense in me having to go out there and try to just go ahead and knock this guy out. And he was comfortable with what he was doing.
I just got something, a quick rant that I just want y'all opinion on, because it's really frustrating me with this boxing game.
Uh-oh.
Okay, we have someone like Triple G, right, who's supposed to be this killer, and all the media does in the past before he met some real challenges was hype him up. Nobody want to fight him. He's the greatest boxer. Mm-hmm. He's better than Bernard. He's this and that, right?
Yep.
And all he had was power, right? That it was just, oh, he's this powerful guy. They was praising him for that. But a guy like Earl Spence, they saying he has no boxing IQ. And he don't have that much experience. But then you go and look at somebody like Lomachenko, they got no power, and they praise him. Oh, he's Bob Arum say he's better than Mayweather. He's better than Ali. He's the greatest. But Earl just showed you, and Terrence Crawford showed you excellent boxing. And what does the commentator say? Oh, people don't want to watch this. This is boring. We want to see knockouts. So it's like when it comes to African-American fighters, it seems like they can't win. If they knock out people, they not smart enough. Now if they have the great boxing IQ like Floyd, oh, he's not entertaining. So it's like you can't win. And J.K. brought up a question earlier with Scully about why we have all these European fighters and champions and stuff like that in America. And I'm like, we don't back our own fighters. We just find which way to drag them down and discredit them and don't praise them. But every other nationality, they praising. Chocolito, he's the greatest since sliced bread. But we saw what happened. As soon as he fought some competition, his lights was out. Same thing with Triple G. Now he fought real competition. Now he don't care about being undisputed. Now they talking about he just want to secure his future for his family financially. We already knew what it was. As soon as they get in there with tough challenges, now the narrative changed. But, oh, when Floyd is chasing money, is a problem. But it's okay for Triple G to clout chase and go after money and not fight the real challenges. I'm just tired of it. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
In response, Mr. Dinkins?
Oh, I was waiting on the other gentleman to respond. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it starts with the fact that we don't back our fighters. I mean, back in the day, man, we followed our fighters. You know, wherever they would fight, we would be there. But, I mean, we don't follow our fighters. We don't support them. And then our fighters, it's almost like they turn their backs on them. You know, like they say, well, okay, you got to not support me, so why should I say, why should I be appearing at your function, or, you know, why should I do this, or why should I do that? And it's like when Earl Spence, he was saying that guys picked him to lose. I mean, those kind of things, you have to let that go. You can't worry about the fact that Leonard thinks that you thought that you were going to lose against this guy and that. You know, that has to motivate you. You can't let that bother you. But there is too much of that going on in the fight game today. And you have, like you say, you talk about Lomachenko. You will never see a black fighter with seven fights and consider a pound for pound. And to me, he's already on a downslide. And if he were to go ahead and fight Tank Davis, people say, oh no, he Tank needs to take about two more years before he fights Lomachenko. That's ridiculous. I mean, he knocked out a guy in four rounds that went the distance with Lomachenko and made him look bad. And they say he's 2 years away from him. That makes no sense to me.
Because
you talk about
he has to build his profile.
Set me up on a rant.
Hey, we encourage rants. On this program, like I said, you know, we talk about boxing. We talk about the boxers. There are certain things that have to be said. I mean, you know, as the champ, when we have a layman on the show, he'll tell you one of his favorite sayings. What is it, Professor, about?
You got to have the right complexion for the protection.
So, you know, hey.
Can I tell you a quick story about layman?
Sure.
I'll make it real quick. You know, when they were filming this movie Daredevil, I had a part in, I've had a part in a lot of movies that were boxing related, and so they brought in Layman, you know, as one of the background fighters, and they were doing some interviewing and doing some shooting over at the Wild Card Gym in Hollywood, and they had all these other guys, and one of the producers looked at Layman and said, no, we don't want him. We want somebody that looks like a real fighter, and he was the only legit fighter in the movie. I mean, it was the craziest thing because they look like – look at his, I guess, his little skinny legs for a heavyweight. Layman had really thin legs, and he had an upper body as bulky, you know, and they would say, oh, he doesn't even look like a fighter. You know, we have to have guys that look like fighters. I couldn't believe it.
Yes, I'm telling you, it's surprising when people don't know, you know, when you're outside the ring and people look at you and go, who's
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah.
You know? But,
yeah, oh, yeah.
But, Mr. Dinkins, we thank you for coming on the show. We
it's
look
always
forward
a
to
pleasure.
Having you back.
I was glad to, and maybe I'll have my little fighter on before his debut. If you can ever arrange that, it would be great. I told him about it, and I said, I'm going to talk to you about that. You know, and it will be great. It will be a great experience for him as well.
When's his debut?
It's on the 19th of next month at the Double Tree Hotel in Ontario.
What about Tuesday evening? I got an opening. You want to put him on?
Oh, Tuesday evening?
Yes, sir. We'll have him on with K9 Bunders.
Oh, okay. Same time?
Same time. That works for you.
Oh, yeah. And matter of fact, when we get finished training, we might cut our training a little bit shorter, and I'll bring him on over here, and we'll go ahead and do that. That'd be great.
All right, sir. Well, you just talked yourself into a show, so there you go.
Excellent. That'd be great.
All right. Well, thank you so much
for participating
with us tonight, sir. And,
thank you.
To back.
I'm going to finish watching this fight now. I see it's still going on. Yeah.
Yeah, it's still going on.
All right. Okay.
Night. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, and good night to the other gentlemen.
That's Mr. John Clement.
Okay. All right. Talk to you later.
Yeah.
Bye.
All right.
Well, DeBron, I thought we'd cover a few bases tonight. So we went through the women's amateur boxing. We got Scully's back in. The champ is actually at this fight. He got called Wednesday, I think it was, to come down and cover this fight. So the champ, we wish him well down there in D.C. And good to have you back too, Professor. You've been absent these last couple of weeks, man. So,
yeah, hey, man, I got that the tooth out my mouth, man. I was in bad shape. The dentist, man. So glad I could eat food now and talk and.
Hey, you have no idea, man, who you're talking to, man. You know, I'm still feel like I'm whispering when I'm talking with these damn dentures in my mouth. So, you know, hey, you know, it's like, hey, man, you know, but hey, it took 72 years to get him out, but you know, I wish I had him back. You know, so anyway, you know, so hey, I almost felt like I was looking like Steve Harvey when they first put him in. I had to take him back. No, I can't do that. Look more like damn mouthpiece. I was like, no. Anyway, I just got way off the subject. See what happens when you get me on a rant? Now I'm talking about damn teeth. But anyway, hey, Professor, man, hey, glad to have you back, man. So why don't you give us your final thoughts for the evening?
All right. Well, as always, thank you, JK. Thank you to our guests. And shout outs to the champ. He's out working the fight tonight with Lamont Peterson. So I'll shout him out and support him and his gym and their organization, which is Brewster's Place. You can put that in your Google search and it'll pop right up and you can find that. Or you can follow the champ on Facebook or Instagram. That's LAMON Brewster, BREWSTER. That's for the champ. Shout out. Please support him. And I'm Jabron Clemens. You can find me here on the Weekend Wrap or on Facebook. That's JABRAN Clemens, CLEMON. Let them know where they can find you at, JK.
Oh, man, you can always find me on the Pugilist Corner or the Weekend Wrap. Actually, just go on our Facebook page, the Pugilist Corner, and we feature both shows. And you'll see pictures of Jabron and also the champ, Scully. And we also like to keep our favorite, our guests on also. So you can check out Mr. Donald Dinkins. You can check our other guest tonight, Bianca from Beautiful Boxers, Beautiful Brawlers. As she said, her father's already a Hall of Famer out here, Mr. Gutierrez. You can Google him. So thank you, everyone, for listening. We look forward to talking to you next week. The champ will be back. Hopefully, Scully will be back, as well as Mr. Jabron Clemens, a.k.a. the Professor. So have a great night, everyone. We look forward to talking to you next week. Mm-hmm.